This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk. We have a great show today. I am interviewing the very talented Tom Basden. He's currently in a show on BBC Two at the moment called Quacks. We think they've got the entire series up on BBC iPlayer as well. He's a very talented man. I've known him years. He's a writer, an actor, a comedian. He's even a musician. It's sort of annoying how good he is. He has also had the show Gap Year out this year. We'll talk a bit about that. And of course, he's one of the co-creators and writers of Plebs on ITV2. He's picked two brilliant songs from films. The first one coming up is from the film Sweet and Low Down, the Woody Allen film. If you've never seen this film, go and check it out. Try and find it online somewhere. Sweet and Low Down, it's one of the ones that kind of went a bit under the radar, which happens to late era Woody Allen, starring Sean Penn as a 1930s jazz musician. And this is from that film. Wonderful. From the film Sweet and Low Down, right?
Yeah.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
How did you... What made you pick that one?
I think it's one of the only soundtrack albums that I own. So I just used to play that song quite a lot. And I think it's kind of the... I tell you what it is. It's the only bit of jazz that I think I really like. I've tried with jazz quite a lot, and I've never really got very far. But guitar jazz, particularly from that film, I really like.
What is that? The sort of Django Reinhardt thing.
Exactly.
What is that era? It's not like like bluegrass, is it? That's a bit more sort of country.
But equally, I don't really know what you'd call it. Isn't it like sort of gypsy guitar? Is that what they call it?
I imagine you're so annoyingly talented that I imagine you could probably play that.
No, I'm annoyingly for me, I'm not talented enough to play
that. That is pretty amazing. One of the good sort of late era Woody Allen films where Sean Penn is the obnoxious jazz player, and yeah. I believe he actually learned to play it well enough so that it could be his fingers in shot. That is pretty incredible.
It's an outlier as a good late era Woody Allen and a good Sean Penn film as well.
Mm. There you go.
Yeah.
There's two things to its name. I think I've liked one Woody Allen film in every five for the last 10 years, which would be two films by my reckoning, or three if you count the very beginning of each.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough.
Vicky...
Vicky Cristina Barcelona is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was one.
And the one in Paris, the time travel one.
No.
Yeah.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, I like that one.
I struggle with that
did
one.
Did you?
But there was one that I saw, Whatever Works, the Larry David one,
which
went completely under the radar. That was actually quite fun.
Okay.
But it's really weird because it's Larry David sort of being Woody Allen, but very much being Larry David because he's not really an actor. He's just Larry David.
Which is good because better than doing the Kenneth Branagh literally doing an impression of Woody Allen, which was bizarre.
But in fact, my favourite Woody Allen film probably is Bullets Over Broadway, which is in some ways late
Oh my
era.
God, thank you. That is my favourite.
Is it?
Yes. I've never, whenever I say that to people, they just think I'm like...
No, it's an incredible film. It's
so good.
Genius. But that's late. I mean, that's like...
Mid-90s,
must be.
Yeah, well, he had a bit of a run again in the mid-90s with, Everyone Says I Love You, Manhattan Murder Mystery, Bullets Over Broadway, Mighty Aphrodite, Deconstructing Harry. That was an amazing... I mean,
That's true, yeah. It was a good run, that.
I was reading about him, his latest film. Let's put aside any personal
is
stuff.
Is it okay if I sip tea?
Of course, sip away. As long as you don't speak and sip at the same time, that will be problematic.
It's more just if your producer, say, was going to... edit them out
all the sips.
And you didn't
we'll just
them.
Release the sips
Fine.
Every time you sip
Fine.
Put that together I was thinking who else even forgetting his personal life and the shit films he's made what other filmmaker has made a film every year for like 40 years?
And also you think about how crazy people go for the likes of Terrence Malick. And you go, well, that's sort of fine, but he's made about 5 films. And even then, like some 2 or 3 of them are great, but other than that...
They're not all humdingers,
they're really not,
they?
But people sort of hold him up as a genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, his strike rate, Woody Allen is still really up there.
He really is.
And
so...
If he was a bit more thoughtful, if he made 1 every 3 years now...
If he just thought about his career a bit more, he might get somewhere.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, Tom, I was sort of looking at some stuff about you, which I didn't really need to do because I know you well. But it suddenly dawned on me that the last time we probably hung out at all was 10 years ago at the Edinburgh Festival. I specifically remember you, me, and Arnab Chanda sitting in some sort of late night bar somewhere, bitching and moaning about the festival and everything we hate about
Sounds
it. And
about
then
right.
the next morning you woke up to a nomination for your show.
Oh, you're really? Saying,
yeah. And I remember looking at that, and after I slagged you off for a bit, I said, well, he's probably got a different opinion on the festival now. And then you went on to win The Newcomer, which was pretty amazing. I was like, I used to love your songs and your live stuff, and it feels like in my memory that you did that, won an award, and then not going to bother with that anymore, and just
A little bit. I think you know what it was like, as you probably remember with my songs, a lot of them are really really short.
Mm.
And
30 seconds and stuff.
And actually, I do kind of think comedy songs work best really short because you sort of get the joke and then you get bored of them. And what it meant was that just writing an hour of songs just took almost all year. So it got to the point after my second Edinburgh show, which didn't go as well as my first, but it was sort of fine, that I just couldn't really... I couldn't really bring myself to write another show. And equally, I sort of had other stuff I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like I could write a show in a couple of months. Do you know what I mean? Because I think...
It's like doing one-liners rather than routines. You've just got to fill up so much more time.
Yeah, I think it is like that, really.
With additional chords. Also, because I've done comedy songs as well, and like, do you not find sometimes that you just can't think of a topic to fit the tune you've written? Or I'm like, this
is an instrumental comedy song.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
It's a good time filler.
I always thought it'd be funny if a drummer left a band and went on tour with solo and played all the songs of, like, say, Bon Jovi's drummer went and played, but none of the other instruments. He played all their hits, but just the drum parts.
I think you'd have a few complaints. it's, it depends how it's marketed.
Or people were like, whoa, I love this one. Yeah. I love this. So, you, yeah, there's no plans to ever do more of that sort
no,
of stuff?
No, there's not no plans, as in there are plans.
Yeah.
There aren't plans, but it's... but I'm not saying...
On, where are we with
but
this?
I'm not saying that...
Are there plans or no plans?
There are no plans, but I might.
But there is a desire, maybe.
Yeah, I would like to go and do another live show at some point. And in fact, I'd like to do one that wasn't sort of based around music, because that does feel like a slightly young man's game in some way, like musical comedy. It feels a little bit glib now to me.
I'll tell Tenacious D that.
Well, I think you should tell him that.
Ooh.
Are they still doing it?
I don't know, actually. I think they
I mean,
did
I love
release
that that's you're looking for the biggest musical comedy you could think of.
Well, I also couldn't think of anyone older. Who's probably I don't know, Tim Minchin's getting on a bit.
Yeah, but you see, he's kind of stopped, hasn't he?
Yeah, he just earns shed there loads of money doing musicals. So what about the stuff you used to do with Tim? Have you still sort of kept an eye in that fire?
Yeah, we still do stuff together. I mean,
Tim King.
I mean, I always try and write stuff for him and like find parts for him and stuff that I do.
So, because Tim, this is Tim Key we're talking about. Yeah. He was in your recent show Gap Year
as well, right?
Yeah. As a regular, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, is this like because he's got something on you, or you just like watching him say your words?
I think he's just really funny, and so he's one of those people that you just get an extra 15% out of what you've written from him.
Yeah,
and also he'll just throw stuff in that you haven't written that's much better than what you have. So I, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer for me. But also, because I know him so well, I can write for him a bit.
Mm.
Which, as you know, when you're close to people who are performers and you kind of have them in your head when you're writing it, it's quite heartbreaking if they don't then do it.
Yeah, that's true. You get so attached to that person.
Yeah.
Sometimes even worse is that you've written a part for someone that you just think is perfect for it. They come in and read and it just doesn't... And you're like, what?
Yeah, that's
But I wrote
weird.
It for you.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Did you have that on How Not to Live Your Life?
Yeah, for the lead character. Yeah,
yeah. I thought so. Yeah.
But
good for you for persevering.
Well, you say that, but my own personal feeling is that it was something that I felt I got better at as time went on. So in a way, maybe there's some harsh truth to that. Were you not tempted to write yourself a part in Gap Year?
Yes, I was, and there was a part I was going to play for a while, but the writing of the show became a bit unruly, and I had to basically write it during filming. And
what?
So, yeah, but so there wasn't really a way of being.
But how long was it in development for?
I mean. I guess it had been going for about 2.5-3 years before it was commissioned, but it would be sort of, it wouldn't be intense, it would be sort of, there'd be periods of writing and periods of waiting.
Is this on spec or were you being paid?
This is a Channel 4 commission.
Yeah.
And then when we came to make the series, we started shooting with maybe two and a bit scripts written.
Right.
Wait.
Why? I'm trying to think of a more articulate question, but just why?
I don't know. I mean, I think... Well, I do know, and I could give you an answer to that, but I think it would be really boring and take on the whole show.
This would be my guess. You've put so much work into making that first episode right and good and probably a gazillion notes from the channel that you almost neglected the rest of the series.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. That's
yes.
a good summary. I mean, to be fair, I could have talked about it. No, that's about right. But even then, I mean, that episode one got rewritten quite a lot anyway after that. But it was more like, it was just impossible to get ahead. That was the main thing.
Right.
That if you're kind of being noted all the time, then there comes a point when you just have to give up on the idea that you're going to make progress on something you haven't yet written. You know what I mean? All you're doing is you're just working on the stuff that's already on paper.
That sounds like the sort of thing that would give me an ulcer, to be honest.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. But then, you know...
So for people that, you know, don't know what we're talking about your show Gap Year that was on E4 earlier this year.
Yes.
If they haven't worked it out, but about young people and their gap year.
Yes.
In which country were they?
Well, they started in China and they ended up up in Nepal via Malaysia and Thailand and Vietnam and places like that.
And so that whole thing of not having the episodes that they're going to shoot later written yet is sort of actually what they do in America anyway, they'll have 12 people to do it rather than just, was it just you?
No, it wasn't just me. There were several other writers, of which Tim was going to be one of the writers.
Okay.
No, there were a bunch of us. But I think it kind of, the buck stopped with me a little bit.
Right. You created it, right? It's your thing.
Yeah, so there'd kind of come a point where, with almost all the episodes, it became a bit of an emergency and I was required to sort of step in a little bit, or kind of forced to step in a little bit. It was a tough thing all round.
Yeah, you're not selling it.
No.
You're not selling the job of a writer.
Well, okay, put it this way. I was in service departments in Kuala Lumpur and sort of on beaches in Thailand and, you know.
That's why you got so far behind, wasn't it?
Beijing. That's a part of the reason. That's part of the reason.
Knowing your work in the past and like knowing the stuff you did with Cowards and Tim and stuff, in a way it's kind of weird that you've ended up with two big shows that you've created on, well, maybe it isn't weird to you, but on ITV2 and E4, which are sort of quote unquote youth channels or something. Do you have to at all adapt your sort of natural instinct of writing for, like, do you get notes saying, listen, you know, it's just not very ITV2, or are you surprised that your writing just works really well for those?
So on E4 there was a bit of that.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of, to give you an example, on E4 we had a thing quite early on where one of the characters, who's played by Janine Garofalo in the show, was meant to work for a guidebook, like a sort of rough guide type thing, and she was a writer for a guidebook. And then later on she comes back and, you know, there's people are pretending to work for the rough guide and stuff. And we got a note very early on from Channel 4 going, guidebooks are a bit passé. So for our E4 audience, this has to be a website. And we were like, what?
But guidebooks still exist, right?
Well, guidebook sales have gone up and up in the last 3 or 4 years. They're about the only thing in publishing that is still making tons of money and improving. But nevertheless, we got this note, and so then that kind of steered loads of, not just the dialogue around it, but story, where you kind of have to have people explaining that they are from a website. I mean, we actually ended up not doing it very much as a story because it doesn't really make a lot of sense, because also what website
did
is
you
this?
Yeah, did you not come out with some like counter arguments, like maybe we can do lots of jokes about people going, what, guidebooks still exist? Or did you just go, right, that's what they want?
It became one of those notes that it was made clear to us that we can't really argue with it.
So does that mean you had to do a load of other like social media-y, sort of Instagram-y references? Because
that sort of thing is kind of, I've found is fine really. I haven't felt the sort of pressure to just kind of mention some Kardashians and Instagram and things. And in fact, plebs is completely immune to all that stuff.
Plural.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that ITV2.
How many Instagrams
really,
do you have?
But you say that I don't do it.
Well,
I don't know.
This is funny you should say that, because my producer Natalie was saying, you know, she likes to do a little bit of research on who's coming in. She's like, really, like, she came in to tell me like Donald Trump's just been shot or something. She went, Tom Basden doesn't have a Twitter.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
There was like a, there was like, you could feel the tension in the room.
Like she'd said, Tom Basson doesn't have a penis, and people were
kind
like,
of, but more surprising than that.
Really?
Have you ever had Twitter?
No.
What is it? Do you know? I already had some respect for you.
Yeah.
I now have. No, way
more
up.
In the
way,
end.
I love that you've not got Twitter. I love that you've never even done it. Because I do it. Well, I don't even do it. I barely tweet, but I have an account. Because this voice in my head goes, well, you have to. Otherwise, what happens if you want to do a tour next year? You've got to sell tickets.
Yeah, but you see, I've never done a tour like that. So I would probably be like you if I'd done that.
Yeah.
It's not a kind of really pioneering kind of moral stance or anything. I'd love to say that it was, but it's more just that I've never had reason to and I'm quite lazy.
You're definitely not lazy.
Okay, no, but I'm lazy in that respect.
I know what you mean, because I feel like, and every time I ever like do work on live shows and that need tickets or thinking about a career thing, you know, people always, you've got to be more active on social media, and it's like, it just isn't me. I'm not someone that thinks of things to tweet about. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
I just don't give a shit about telling everyone something I've just seen.
Yeah.
And well, I'm probably, you know, losing millions and millions of pounds.
Maybe.
And you definitely
know.
Are.
I don't know what kind of career you and I could have in an alternate reality where we're huge on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny though, because it's one of the few things where over the years I've sort of had to justify not doing something in a way that, like, usually or ordinarily it would be the other way around. That if you sort of choose to do something, mm-hmm. then people go, well, why have you done that? But in this situation, I have to justify the fact that I've not chosen to do something. It's quite weird.
Yeah.
And PR people that in the past have treated me like I was genuinely mad.
Yeah, or you're being deliberately,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Difficult.
Yeah, right.
Why wouldn't you do it? I mean, it's easy.
Yeah.
But
I think...
Are you on any other social media?
Well, I do have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
But I don't really do anything with it. I don't know. Do you know what? I think it's... I get really annoyed having to respond to emails.
Do you?
Yeah. It just,
okay, that explains a lot from when I was trying to get you on the show. Yeah.
Do you know what? It does, though. It does, doesn't it? No, but and
like,
it's not.
Does this guy not like me anymore? No, I mean, I know I've not seen him in a long time, but
I'm sort of quite in my own head when I work.
Yeah,
and it means that when I sort of start work, which I think of as like opening a computer, I just want to get on with the stuff that's in my head, and it's part of the reason why my wife and I moved to China for a year and a half, because
no one
emails you till 5 p.m. And you don't get Facebook, you don't get Twitter. It's brilliant.
I was going to ask you about this, because we obviously have mutual friends and things, but Sam Leifer, who directed some of my show and you write plebs with, I remember him once saying to me, you know, Tom's gone to China for a year, like a bit annoyed, because it means you're obviously not going to be...
He was quite annoyed.
Yeah. You've got a show to write and you've just pissed off to China.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's obviously the accent thing. You're not going to be on the end of a phone in like a second or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was really, I think I was going through a bit of a tough time with writing and just work and stuff.
And I should go to China.
I could be big in China. No, I just thought...
This haven for writers.
Yeah. All the greats come out of China in British TV comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But I was like, how do you... I always wanted to ask you this. I never really had an opportunity, but do you not ever get this like paranoia that you're out of the loop by doing something like that? Do you just not care?
I don't know what the loop is, though. Like, I mean...
I don't know what the loop is. But, you know, like, not being around for auditions or someone wants...
I don't know. I mean...
You know,
I guess if I was in a phase where I wanted to act more, then yes, I would feel like that, definitely.
Yeah.
If I'm just writing and I've got something to write and I know that I have to write it, then I kind of only see it as helpful in that I do get thrown off course by things, and I do kind of get quite stressed about the idea of the loop, I suppose, or whatever that is.
It's good to get out of the loop.
So, like, a couple of years ago, I went to LA for about 36 hours and did a sort of 15 meetings in that time.
Yeah.
And there was something about...
You wrote a lot in that time as well?
Yeah, there's something about the fact that in most cities, the billboards are for sort of toothpaste or Toyotas, and in LA, it's all for TV shows and films. There's something about that that made me just get incredibly stressed and completely paralyzed me in terms of like my ability to think properly or kind of like have any kind of sense of normality, because I think I do get a bit phased by that kind of status anxiety or that kind of career anxiety.
Yeah.
So I need to take myself away from it or I won't do anything.
Well, I'm sort of both pleased and like shared empathetic yeah. of what you just said, because from afar it looks like you just don't give a shit about that like you're cool.
I could lie to you and say that's what it yeah. is, but I mean look I've done comedy for fuck's sake. Like clearly a big part of my personality is wanting to be liked by people.
Mm.
So like I'm definitely not a kind of James Dean figure in the comedy writing world who doesn't give a shit.
That's what I had you down
yeah as. Well, I appreciate that, but I'm definitely not. It's more that I just know that it'll mess with my head. If like going on Twitter, I know that it'll mess with my head.
See, I have all those things, but not the willpower to not check it or look or go to LA and curse at all the other people's yeah. billboards and or like Facebook or whatever. But yeah. it's the it's like it sucks me in. Sometimes yeah. I can avoid it, but. What do you do in China? How was your day-to-day life there, and where were you? Where were you based?
We were in Beijing for 6 months, and there we'd do like language lessons in the morning, and then I'd write in the afternoon.
God, this sounds so romantic.
It was pretty good.
Was it?
Yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Do you speak fluent like Mandarin or something?
No, not fluent, but I speak some Mandarin.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Some.
I speak some Mandarin.
I can recite a couple of books.
I can't.
What you can... order stuff in restaurants
and have sort of basic conversations, but it's the kind of language where you can get out of your depth so quickly.
Yeah.
It's completely non-intuitive, you know. There's nothing, if you don't know something, there is no way around it. It's not like if you're in France or Italy, you can kind of go, I get that you're saying something to do with the bag. Like in China, there is no way you would ever get that saying someone is saying something to do with the something. It's just not a thing. You either know it exactly or you don't.
I'd heard a fact that the English language is one of the few languages, including things like French and Spanish, is one of the few languages where if you say things in the wrong order, people still kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But in quite a lot of other languages, you swap two words around and it means something completely different. So I imagine Mandarin is that, but times.
Yeah, and also the fact that there's just such a small range of different sounds compared to English or Romance languages, you know.
So were you there just for the experience? It wasn't like your wife had a job or...
Well, sort of. I mean, Megan had just quit her job working for The Times as an arts journalist.
Right.
And she'd lived in China before for a few months. So we just moved back there ostensibly so that she could... sort of see if she could make it work as a kind of freelance arts journalist writing pieces about China from China.
Wow.
Which she did for a while.
Yeah.
How,
that just seems like such a huge, like, what if that doesn't happen?
Well, it's sort of also fine because we just rented out my flat and I had plebs to write and fresh meat to write.
Okay.
I mean, so it's not.
You were sort of working.
Yeah, I was. I had work to do that just, you know, meant that we didn't really need to worry about it.
Did you know other people out there?
I tell you what, we spent a lot of time with Des Bishop.
Really?
The Irish American comedian. Because he was out there for a year learning Chinese to then do a TV show. About being in China.
Wow.
So we hung out with him quite a lot. But otherwise, you know, we sort of made some friends.
And then is this partly what gap year came from, being out there? Or is it,
did you
do a gap year when you were younger?
I did. Both of those. But yes to both of those.
Yeah.
The China bits of the show certainly came from, you know, our experiences when we were there. And then I suppose the characters pretty based more on me and my friends when I was 19.
You went to Footlights. Was your gap year just before you went to Footlights?
It was, yeah.
And when you went to... Did you go to a prestigious school? Secondary school or anything?
I went to King's College Wimbledon.
Okay.
So I guess it's
the King's College bit sounds posh, and then Wimbledon...
Yeah, I think it kind of is.
Yeah.
But
we... My producer says it is posh.
Yeah, no, it is kind of posh.
I didn't even go to university, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
But I wonder what the psyche is when you get into Cambridge. Like, is there a feeling of dread, or like I'm fucking amazing, or like what? It's such a like pinnacle. It's such a place that so few people go to.
Yeah. I think. I mean, it's really.
Is it dread? Is it like, oh my god?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that. I mean, interestingly, it may not be interesting for me. Cambridge insisted on me having a gap year. I applied to go that straight after school, and then they said, no, you shouldn't do that.
That's quite nice of them.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, it might also have been a bit of an indictment of my personality, such as it was back in the day.
Yeah, God, this guy's boring. He needs something.
I mean, come on.
He needs
on.
To get laid or something.
Well,
just,
you know, yeah. That wasn't in the letter exactly, that was clearly the subtext.
Yeah. And take an E in India or something.
A little bit. Yeah.
Or maybe really they were like, oh, we just can't afford him this year. You know.
What, like a sort of football transfer?
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then, so obviously being in Footlights I think even in your year, you like obviously people like Tim and I don't know who else was
so in? Mark Watson, Alex Horn, Stefan Goloszewski, Lloyd Wolf.
Wow.
Hang on, there must be others.
Do you, when you're in Footlights, do you just think, well, sorted, comedy career?
Sort of. I mean, you definitely are aware of all of the people that have made a comedy career out of it.
Yeah.
And the sort of regularity with which they've done it to mean that it does feel like that's a kind of permissible route through life.
It would be awfully disappointing if you wanted to be a famous comedian so bad and you're one of the few that literally never even got a gig.
Yeah, but there probably are a few.
Yeah.
There probably are.
But it is amazing how even still to this day it produces all these amazing comedy.
It is. And you know, it's the kind of thing when I was like 25, 26, I really, really hated talking about it.
Really?
Yeah, of course, because you know, it wasn't like I'd sort of walked into a TV adaptation of Jeeves and Worcester and was just going, well, you know, I've gone to a good school, I went to Cambridge, now I'm doing this, thank you very much. Or even like I was writing jokes for Radio 4 out of Cambridge, the way some people do. But it, you know, when you kind of take up your own Edinburgh show, you are very much competing with people on about the levelest playing field you can find as a sort of, you know, as a writer or comedian. And yet almost all of the kind of the interviews that I had would start and sometimes end with how responsible Cambridge Footlights is for the fact that I'm a comedian and that my comedy has done well in sort of, you know, in critical terms or whatever, or at least, you know, I won an award or whatever. And there's part of that where you go, I completely get it, and I'm extremely lucky to have had that sort of access to particularly those people around me, just inspiring people, very funny people who make it clear that it's possible to sort of to try and do this for a living and not be alone as well. But at the same time, it does grind you down because you just really get very fed up having to kind of talk about it.
You seem a little bit more okay with it now, though.
These days, to be honest with you, I think these days I do feel different about it because. One, I don't really get asked about it anymore because it was so long ago. And two, I think in my 20s, I went from being slightly, you know, Reaganite. This has in no way influenced my success in comedy. I completely reject any correlation between private school, Cambridge Footlights, and the comedy career. And I think that it's bullshit. I think that I was really in denial about that.
Yeah. I think, but for me, it's not so much that, like, oh, well, you've done that, so therefore you automatically get this. It's more like, what must it feel like being someone in your early 20s in this environment that has all that rich history of people that have come before? Like, just the feeling of that. Like,
yeah.
Because
But I think that's where comedy as a thing, compared to theatre, compared to musicals or anything like that, is irreverent. It's by nature iconoclastic. You know, what you want to do when you get there is reinvent it.
Yeah,
and so
and reject what's just
definitely,
happened.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that's the only time that comedy is really good.
Yeah,
is when it resembles rock and roll and people turn up and go, I want nothing to do with the skiffle bands of the 1950s. I want to do something completely different that's based on.
And then
the
you ended up in a skiffle band.
There you go. I ended up in the comedy equivalent of a skiffle band.
Where did you meet Sam, who you co-created Plebs with?
I met him in an audition for a Friends Reunited Ident series that I got.
And, twiddles his tash.
But he was good friends with my oldest friend, Jay Van Tulliken, who's a director.
Yeah.
And so he'd brought me into the audition ostensibly because he wanted to sort of get to know me.
Okay.
Because he'd sort of seen
that sounds
seen
a bit
booster.
Sort of groomy.
Yeah, it is.
It worked for him, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
And you're still caught
I
up in that terrible, abusive relationship.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was directing the...
was directing the Friends Reunited Ident.
Yeah.
Which, as you know, did wonders for Friends Reunited.
Sam Leifer single-handedly destroyed that thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so at what point did you think, we've got something, we're going to write together? Because that is a really tricky thing, writing with other people, especially duos, I think. Like, having that alchemy, being able to tell someone you don't think their idea is good and vice versa. You've had it now with Sam and with Tim. You had it as a four-piece with Cowards. That's quite lucky to have that repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah, except... It's
you hate all of them.
I don't really write with them.
Okay.
I don't sit at a computer with them.
Yeah.
So even with Cowards, we would all write separate sketches.
Okay.
And then never rewrite each other's sketches, anything like that.
Serious?
Yeah, yeah. And then bring them in.
Well, you'd give notes and say, I think,
because it's...
So you'd perform one of the other sketches begrudgingly?
It's pretty much. I mean, it was such a flawed system. But what we would do is, like, we'd have these gigs on Sunday nights at the Hen and Chickens. So a week before, we'd all bring in maybe like 10 or 12 sketches that we'd written in the last two or three weeks, and we'd read them all out, and then we'd pick our favourites as a group. We'd vote on our favourites, and then we'd just perform them.
Like,
but we'd
sort
never
of communist
really think
sketch
to rewrite.
Group.
Yeah, well, basically, yeah. And it... But I think that's the brilliant thing about sketches, in a way, that they're kind of single idea things. You just kind of shit it out, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't, do another one.
Mm-hmm.
But it was anathema to us to go...
Beautiful analogy, by the way.
Thanks. But to go, why don't we like work on this sketch to make it better?
Yeah.
And never did that.
Really?
We just wrote different ones.
Yeah, I did sketch comedy for a bit, and we kind of just sort of improvised them until they were a thing, and then did it, and then never went back and rewrote until quite late on.
Yeah, but that's an equally valid way of doing it, isn't it? Because if you, well, I imagine there's more sense of ownership with the sketches in that way for everybody.
Does sketch comedy as a TV show format, is that ever gonna exist again?
I don't know.
I really enjoyed Cowards going all the way back then.
Yeah,
when BBC Three was a It was a BBC Three show, or BBC Four.
BBC Three online.
Right.
Sort of thing. And then BBC Four, three episodes on TV.
The most gradual promotion ever known in TV. Good news, guys.
Yeah.
You're going on TV, the channel that no one sees.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
That proved to be quite a good, accurate motto for people.
So are you doing what season number are you on now of Plebs?
This is number four.
That's amazing going, man. Are you doing a fifth as well?
Well, I mean, I'd like to. It's the kind of thing that it takes time, and it's a bit of a ball ache, but it's so much fun.
Like, are you the same with how you worked before, like with Sam, that you just come up with ideas together and then both go and write?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. I think it's just having done three series and whatever it is, like 24 episodes of it, I think that if anything now, we can just sniff out the best stories so much quicker.
Yeah.
So we can be a bit more efficient. But it's an incredibly fun show to write.
Yeah.
And last series we hired another few writers to come in. So we ended up not writing two of the episodes. In fact, just one in the end, because we had to sack one of the writers.
Okay.
And it just felt like I know, but it happens. But we felt like we'd been so stupid to give away an episode of this show because it's about the most fun you can have professionally, sort of writing.
Do you enjoy writing then?
Yeah, I love
it. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you actually sit there?
Do you
and
not
like,
enjoy it?
Oh, it's a. I don't know how to describe it. It's like, this is how I feel about writing. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. Oh, I love it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's like. I love
it's sex.
It is a lot like, and that was me during sex. I hate this. I hate this. Oh, I love it. No, it was like, it's like, it just feels sometimes like I want to be doing other things too much. Like, I guess it's the antisocial aspect of it and just sitting there on your own. You know, yeah. I much prefer, like, you know, I've been doing a bit of directing the last couple of years as well. And I like that thing of being in a room with other people, making choices together.
I understand.
Instinctively as well, rather than, like, you know, the worst thing in the world is, to, like, you talk about, earlier you talked about gap year being 3 years in development. I mean, that's what drives me mad. Yeah. When I know a show is definitely going to get made, like, you've got a shoot date and you're writing, then it's sort of fun because you're like, oh, imagine, you can visualise it more and you feel confident that this thing's actually going to... But when you're writing in this sort of world of, oh, will the BBC like this or will Channel 4 like this or, you know...
Look, I agree, and I think that's also part of the reason why the film ministry is in such a terrible state in this country that it almost everyone seems to work on the basis that there is no guaranteeing anything will happen at any point with anyone's ideas, and it's just completely demotivating. This almost feels like there's no point.
And just how long people want to develop for as well.
Yeah,
you know, Alice Lowe made a film last year. She wrote it in like 4 months and shot it. And with the exception of maybe like budgetary constraints, or when she wrote it, she probably had to go, well, I can't set this there because it's, you know, we haven't got the money or whatever. So if there's any shortcomings, I loved it. But if there was, it was probably because she had a very strict parameter.
Yeah, yeah.
But she went and made a brilliant film, and which kind you kind of go, well, see, it doesn't take 6 years to develop something.
I agree, but the only real lesson you can deduce from it is that the way that you kind of make good films as a British person is by completely ignoring any assistance or subsidy from anyone within the kind of official film industry, because they will waste your time.
Yeah,
and that's pretty
a really
terrible
positive
lesson.
Message.
No, but I don't. Honestly, like, I don't really.
Have you had some bad experiences?
Yeah,
with...
not unusual.
Yeah,
I've just had experiences you have when you try.
You've probably
and
had
make
positive
films.
Ones.
Yeah, probably on balance.
But they still
nice
feel
people.
They still feel like
completely but nevertheless it does it, when someone like Ben Wheatley or Alice Lowe makes a film in the way you're describing or someone like, you know, Shane Meadows even makes a film in that manner, the film industry is quite quick to try and take credit for it, even though the reason that they've done it is in order to not get bogged down with people in the film industry, because that is the only way that they're going to guarantee that their film will ever be made.
Really positive, feel good about.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's. I mean, listen, you're in the right place. I bitch and moan about the state of the film industry all the time, but it's just.
But as I say, I don't think. I really don't think it's a. It's about people. Making bad decisions, even or even being like sort
it's
of
almost the system.
Misinformed. It's just the nature of the risk.
Yeah,
involved.
Yeah, yeah, right.
In it.
So, do you? Because we should mention you're currently in BBC Two show at the moment, Quacks, which I watched the first episode. This is like the first thing I can think of for you in a while. Correct me if I'm wrong. Well, this could go anywhere. You're looking at me. Like, what is he gonna? Where you have sort of starred in, like, you're one of the leads in a show that you haven't written or been involved in the production of. Is that right?
Yeah.
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 You were in The Wrong Man's, right? But that was more a supporting role.
Yes.
And you did end up writing on that show, right?
Some of that, yeah.
So was this fun to do, just to turn up and say that? I mean, it looks like a lot of fun.
It was great fun.
Why do we all want to do Victorian period stuff? Is it Victorian? I'm sure.
It is Victorian. Yeah. I think the costumes are good.
Yeah.
The locations are fun. It's all set in London anyway.
Yeah.
You don't have to go very far.
Yeah.
You can't really do it at Wimbledon Studios anyway. I mean, it... It's a joy. It's the kind of reason you get into acting in a way that I think, you know, for the sort of RADA trained people, they probably like nothing more than doing a period drama.
Yeah.
And
we don't, in comedy, you just don't get to do it as much as well. So it's even more like there are always going to be period dramas, but period comedies will happen once every 7 years or whatever. Right. And it's such a great cast as well. And
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I wasn't massively familiar with the team behind the show. Who was? I'm not even sure if I actually saw the credits, to be honest.
Well, that'll be why.
Why? That will be why. Yeah. I'm just thinking.
Did I just reel off the credits?
No, I'm just thinking. Did I look and didn't know the names, or did I just like not look? Who wrote the show?
So it's written by James Wood, who wrote Rev,
and
Ambassadors, and Decline and Fall recently. So he's really great at.
Is he a playwright as well?
Like comedy, drama-y thing. No, I don't think he is a playwright. Really,
yeah.
He's a screenwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see Rise and Fall. Was that the Cumberbatch?
Decline and Fall.
Jack Whitehall.
Yeah.
And that was a drama, was it?
That was, well, it was a comedy, really. Yeah. It was comedy drama.
Okay. How is the show doing?
I don't know. I think
it's hard to tell in this day and age, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, really. I mean, I think the first episode got good numbers.
Yeah.
But what that means going forward, I don't know. And also, it's all available on iPlayer already.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a fairly new thing for BBC to do that. So I don't know if that's good or bad. And, you know, it came out over the August holidays. School holidays, which isn't hugely helpful.
Wonderful times.
Yeah, it's quite annoying that.
Yeah.
But I think it's doing really well. You know, critically, it's doing well.
I think it's always better to get a terrible slot, because when they pump promotion into a show and it doesn't do well, you're doomed. But if a show they didn't really go hell for leather with just does okay, they'll be like, okay, maybe we'll put a bit more. But you can't. If a show opens big and then drops the next episode, everyone's disappointed.
I know.
Just got to start small build, is my.
But I remember, like, when the first thing I did with Sam Neill was this pilot called Brave Young Men.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did
that
you?
Was with Mark Wootton.
That's
as well.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And they put that out, no lie, at 1 a.m. on a Sunday. So it's technically a Monday.
Don't knock.
Technically a Monday, 1 a.m. And then they come back to us and go, it just didn't get the ratings. And you're like, okay, well, first of all, there's the slot, but also it's a pilot. There is no way that the fault of not getting ratings can be levelled at the people who made the show when it's a pilot.
Yeah,
it's completely out of your control. Yeah.
Well, look, the McGregor and Mayweather fights at 5 a.m. so they might be complaining about their time slot.
But that's what they're, you know, comparing it to.
Yeah. They should have done with your pilot with Mark Wootton. They should have done a pay-per-view.
Yeah, they should have.
That would have fucking gone nuts.
Done.
That would have
just
done.
Just introduce some MMA.
Well, I hope the show goes well. And is Gap Year, is that, do you know, are you going to be doing more of that?
No, we're not doing more of that. No. And
in a way,
all the reasons I talked about earlier, I don't hate that decision.
Yeah.
I was sad that it was like that the channel didn't push it harder.
Yeah.
And that they did things like they forced the name on me, or the title of the show on me as well, you know, that kind of thing.
What was your title?
We had loads, but it was called Foreign Bodies all through production.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's much better.
Sounds a bit kind of. Could be like one of those Scandinavian thrillers, though, couldn't
it? Yeah, well, this is it. It's that if you're looking for a title to deliver with absolute clarity that this is about people on a gap year, then Foreign Bodies is definitely not as good as Gap Year.
No.
You know?
I blame Judd Apatow for it does what it says on the tin.
It's terrible. There are genuinely films called Horrible Bosses.
Yeah.
You think about that and you sort of think, how has this happened that we're being infantilised this much that they have to call a film Horrible Bosses?
Well, the irony of that, because I've seen the first one anyway, is that isn't really even the main point of the
film.
Come
on.
Well, it's like that they kill their bosses. No. So they could have gone killing your horrible bosses. Okay, and that would have been even more like, oh, okay, I know what that film is.
It's
ridiculous.
The bosses aren't nice, are they?
They're not nice. Okay, fine. But they are quite funny.
Yeah.
Well, ish. Okay. That film I had a bit of a problem with. I'm like, I just don't buy these people would kill. Just don't.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, that anyway, title. That's another thing. Yeah. I would say that's a shame, but it sounds like you're actually at peace with that decision. And considering that I've just discovered that you love writing, you actually love writing, you call it fun.
No, I don't
and
love it.
You described
all the time.
That as a horrible experience.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong, I don't love it all the time. It's really frustrating. And it can be like getting blood out of a stone. But, you know, when it's fun, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing.
We're going to move on to the last piece, which we haven't talked about yet.
We haven't.
I'm hoping you've picked something for me to discuss with you.
What do you mean?
The guilty pleasure.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You haven't picked anything.
I have. Or have I?
Normally we find out before.
Or have I?
Or have you? Is this you, like, you know, scrambling for extra time to think of...
I have thought about something that we can talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so do you want to do that now?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I present you Tom Basden's guilty pleasure.
And before I do this, sorry, I've slightly messed with your format here. It's not like one. Should it be one thing?
It can be. Look, we're slightly changing the rules lately. So
okay, because what I was going to say is that the my so I've really
it's fine
not doing well on this the show. But my guilty pleasure really is sort of modern Chinese movies that no one will ever see here.
Okay.
But some of them are really worth seeing because they're really weird. And but in a kind of like fun, interesting way. In a kind of like it sounds very patronizing, I don't mean it to be. They're really good as well, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they also it's when you watch Chinese mainstream blockbusters, particularly kind of rom-coms and things, you realize just how incredibly formulaic everything that comes out of America is, and like how sort of deeply genre defined everything is, and for that it's really really worth doing.
What can you give an example of some films, because in a way it sounds like you could be, you know, this isn't really like a review show too much, or like I don't claim to be a sort of cineast or anything, but it sounds like you talk about these modern Chinese movies and it could be like, you know, it could sound very intellectual or like
But the thing is that they're not films like there are Chinese directors who are kind of really well known on the arty circuit, like your kind of Zhang Yimou's and your Jia Zhang Ke's and people like that, and Kermode will be very clued up on them.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of stuff that gets released in cinemas, and he won't have seen any of it.
Yeah.
And I'd almost
for mostly a Chinese audience,
entirely a Chinese audience, but potentially other sort of Asian countries.
Are they thrillers? Are they comedies?
So
are they?
There's, I mean, there's a film called Silent Witness that was made a few years ago. Nothing to do with the BBC coroner drama, which is about a court case in which the guy is accused of killing his daughter, but he and it's so odd and brilliant, and the kind of denouement is there's like five twists in it, and it's just so enjoyable. But it's the only reason that I kind of watch these films is because from being in China, and sometimes you go to the cinema and it's just, you know, it may be that it's got English subtitles and you just see whatever's on, or being on a plane and wanting to watch a Chinese movie because I just wanted to sort of, you know, practice hearing Mandarin and stuff. And it's just really fascinating to me that like there is sort of no movement at all outside China to go, people should maybe watch some of these films. In the way that even something like Bollywood does get the odd Bollywood festival, or people talking about Bollywood films, or Channel 4 showing the odd Bollywood film. And there's just a lot of Chinese films that I've seen that are really worth watching, because for anyone, particularly anyone who wants to sort of know anything of what's going on in China. So like So Young is a really interesting film. which starts off as a kind of like a campus university kind of like rom-com, like, and then turns into these kind of adults reflecting on their kind of broken dreams, and someone dies, and it's just tonally it's all over the place.
In a good way.
Great way.
Yeah.
Great
way. What's so young?
Yeah. So young.
Okay. And can you watch these without reading subtitles? Are you that...
No. Okay. But Chinese people can't.
Oh, okay. Why?
Because Mandarin's crazy.
Okay.
So, like... And also, because China is so big that all different parts of China speak different versions of Chinese, very different versions of Chinese. They all use the same alphabet characters, but sound completely different. So... everything on TV is subtitled.
Wow.
Because it would be a nightmare to try and make people just listen to things.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that weird being in a... I mean, I know it's...
So radio is a very bad idea.
This show is massive there.
Yeah.
And the subtitles really help. Isn't it... I know it's a huge country with, you know, so many people in it, but isn't it weird to be in a country where you need subtitles for your own language? That's pretty mental.
Yeah, but it's an incredibly inefficient system like that there.
Yeah. Well, Tom, it's been a delight talking to you.
Likewise. Are we done?
We're pretty much done. Yeah. We're just going to play out with your second choice of song.
Here we go. Someone just... Is that the producer just...
Oh yeah, we've got a little
IMDb synopsis for Silent Witness.
Silent Witness.
The murder of a to-be stepmom is being prosecuted with apparently clinching evidence. The father holds his accused daughter innocent. The faithful driver and his seemingly amorous wife are involved. Further differing evidence spouts, to say the least.
That was the original title.
Yeah.
I'm going to check these two out. Silent Witness.
The other thing is the subtext of Silent Witness is that the younger generation are all profligate idiots, and that the older Chinese generation are sort of holding the country together. Okay. And that's what's really interesting about it.
Wow. That wouldn't go down well as a message here.
No.
So
a lot of Chinese messages wouldn't go down well.
They'd all need subtitles. So your second song that you picked isn't technically from the screen.
No.
But maybe one day it will be.
I'm sure it will.
They must be doing this. You know, I'm not a massive... I like some musicals, but I'm not like a... I'd go to see musicals all the time. But this is one of those ones that even if you're not into musicals, it's just an absolute joy
from
start to finish. I mean, it's ridiculous. I kind of find it bizarre that this... we're talking about the Book of Mormon. Of course, I find it bizarre that a show that is that kind of almost edgy or left field, if you like, or it appeals to so many people.
Yeah.
Like the writers of South Park, which you would think is a bit of a niche, well, not niche, but like for a certain taste, have somehow pulled off.
Maybe, but you know, I think South Park's one of the best TV shows, you know, in.
But my mum wouldn't watch South Park, but she would probably enjoy Book of Mormon.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like that's an amazing...
Well, I agree. A lot of people are put off with South Park because of the sort of voices and stuff, and it's quite...
Well,
it
also
quite
it's
weird.
Crude, and, but who doesn't like poop and farts and...
It's so sophisticated, South Park.
I know.
It's, the satire on it is just phenomenal.
I haven't seen it in years.
I mean, you've got to go... You just work your way through recent series, you really won't be disappointed.
Really? So, is it still...
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, yeah.
I think... what was the puppet one? Oh my God, I've gone blank.
Oh, Team America.
Team America.
Yeah, it's genius.
One of my favourite.
Yeah.
Comedy films aren't coming out every week, ones, are they?
No,
so,
not,
I mean, that probably is one of the funniest in the last 10 years or something.
Definitely.
Might be longer now. So, but you've picked this song because clearly you love these guys.
I love them,
and
I remember going to see this show, and likewise, I've never been an enormous fan of musicals in the past, but when this show started, I was just smiling.
Yeah.
And it's really rare that I sort of watch stuff and I'm just kind of smiling and I'm able to just enjoy it without thinking about how it was made or what choices the creator's made.
You know? Yeah.
And that didn't really stop until the end. I just loved it.
Well, it's a great choice. Thank you, Tom.
Not at all.
And good
Thanks
luck with the rest
me.
Of
oh, it's my good. Life.
Good luck with the rest of your life.
Thanks, Dan.
I've got some bad news. good luck with the rest of Quacks. I hope it returns.
Thank
You've probably
you.
Got no news on that yet. But this is, ironically, Hello
Love it.
Yeah.
I love what you did with your voice there as well.
From the original cast of Book of Mormon. Original.
Hello. My name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book. Hello. My name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago. It has so many awesome parts, you simply won't believe how much this book can change your life. Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ. Hello, my name is Elder Young. Hello, did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA? You can read all about it now. Hello, in this nifty book, it's free, no, you don't have to pay. Hello, hello. My name is Elder Smith, and can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse? Hello! Hello!
Hello!
I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello!
Hi!
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely home.
Hello!
It's an amazing book.
Bonjour!
Hola!
Ni hao!
Me llamo Elder White.
Are these your kids?
This book gives you the secret to eternal life.
Sound good?
Eternal life.
With Jesus Christ.
It's super fun.
Hello.
And if you let us in, we'll show you how it can be done.
No thanks.
You sure?
Well,
that's fine.
Goodbye.
Have fun in hell.
Hey now.
You simply won't believe how much this book will change your life.
Change your life.
This book will change your life.
Hello, would you like to change religions? I have a free book written by Jesus.
No, no, Elder Cunningham. That's not how we do it. You're making things up again. Just stick to the approved dialogue.